No, it's for the full show. In a supplement, it will be a whole page next week. I would have liked to have it Saturday last, because your lecture is Tuesday, but it didn't work because I had things and other things. So it will be an old page, and it will be, you know the folk songs?
Yeah.
But I've had an interview with you.
Yeah,
It will be in our cultural supplement, whole page, kind of portrait who you are and what your ideas are.
Yeah.
As far as we haven't had them in a newspaper already, but... could you tell me something for readers about yourself? What were your backgrounds, where you came from, you studied, etc., who were the persons who influenced you?
Yes. Well, my first background is Algeria, where I am born, and in Algeria I am born in a part of Algeria which is called the Kabylie, and in this part we have special language and culture, which is the culture of all North Africa, which is called the Berber culture, and it is represented in Morocco, in south of Algeria, in other parts of North Africa, in Libya, now by groups, fragmented groups. And this is important because when is raised in this minority, cultural minority, linguistic minority in Algeria, has to face two steps of discovery. Discovering the identity of Algeria as well as North Africa. The first is of course the Arabic and Islamic expression, which is general to all North Africa, and the second is French culture and language. So these two major steps
but you were
are very influential for the training of somebody who comes from a cultural linguistic minority.
But apart from personal abilities and capacities, why is it that you came from a very little village, I presume, came in contact with two great cultures, and you had your own third culture, and then you go to Paris, you get in the Sorbonne, then you go to Los Angeles, you work here. While a lot of people who start backwards, stay very backwards. What?
Yes, this
was it a very hard struggle?
Oh yes, absolutely, and it is still a struggle, it's not finished.
Yeah.
Although I am traveling around the world and I'm invited in several countries, universities, it's still a struggle because there is still great effort to develop so that in Europe, especially now, this kind of approaching several cultures in a cross-cultural approach and not in a juxtaposed approach, staying in one culture and saying this is my culture, this is my identity, this is the these are the values to which I refer, and I look to you just from this place. Me, I did never do this, maybe because I have been exposed to French culture very early in my age, and many Algerians actually did it, perhaps not in the same intensity, because they didn't study Arabic as I did, and they didn't become historians of Islamic thought as I did. Me, I decided to deepen these two cultures which were present in Algeria and are present in North Africa, and I considered that it was enriching to go across it and to say what can be done by exploring it without deciding from the beginning that I must stay in what I call my identity. So this is a problem of how to handle the whole question of identity. As I told you, I come from Middelburg, here in Holland. We had the 3 days meeting of the Dutch Commission for UNESCO.
Yeah.
We met there, met there to discuss precisely the question of identity, European identity today, because Europe today has to face these our claims for identities in European societies itself, and Europe is reacting like all other societies because people feel threatened in their what they think that it is their identity. This reaction in Europe, after all what Europe did since 16th century to strengthen intellectually, culturally, historically, politically, economically its existence as Europe, it became even a model for the rest of the world. In spite of this strong affirmation of identity, we see Europe expressing fear because some Muslims are living in European societies. Which kind of fear we can have in Europe when all has been done since so long time to express a European identity, and only 15 million Muslims are living spread in all Europe. It's nothing compared to what Europe is. So this shows how the concept of identity is still very fragile and badly analyzed, and we showed this in this conference.
Do you when you go there have a kind of ironic idea from people are struggling with something I've done all my life?
Yes. Ah, yes. I see it like this. I feel extremely easy. Myself. Yeah. Very comfortable.
Yeah.
Because I did this exercise, which is a cross-cultural, cross-intellectual exercise. I did it since I was almost a child.
But your Archimedean point, so to speak, to your point of identity, the fixed point, will be Islam, I presume.
No.
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 You're not considering yourself.
I tell you, it's a continuous cross-cultural and cross-intellectual exercise.
Mm-hmm.
This
but
is the work.
But as a person?
As a person too.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Because I have been transformed all the way by this kind of opening always new spaces for new intelligibility. This is my
But when you're walking streets in Syria, whatever, as a Muslim, as a professor, as a Westerner, someone who has lost his roots in the eyes of the people there,
as somebody belonging to several spheres of human expression, I put it like this: cultural expressions, intellectual expressions in Europe are an unavoidable reference. One has to know it, and it's not because I am trained at first in my life in an Islamic context that I should stick all my life to an Islamic identity, as it is called, because as a historian, as a historian using also anthropological approach of cultures, I cannot accept the definition of identity which is currently used by almost all social groups and nations, or so-called nations, just to carry on a political struggle for power. This is my approach of identity, because identity is always a power relationship between groups. It is not something which is necessarily cultural, intellectual, to approach what we call a better expression of truth. A tolerant philosophy for other cultures. So I think that even European societies, in spite of their claim for a universal cultural intellectual model, which they are supposed or they claim to have produced already since 18th century, this is the claim in Europe. This claim is itself more an affirmation of hegemony, of an hegemonic power, than an intellectual attitude. And the test of this Why I say this is precisely the present reaction of European societies facing very small minorities of Muslims who came in the last 20 years to settle in European societies.
Can you enlarge a little on that aspect?
Yes, because the existence of Muslims in European societies at such a number, it's a more important number than it has been before, before the 70s, is a new event in European societies. Up to now, European societies have built and affirmed their identity on the basis of Christianity as a reference, and this Christian reference remained the ultimate reference for all the values, ethical, political, theological, etc., up to the 18th century. And then Europe has created an alternative cultural, intellectual model, which is the secular, the secularized model. And Europe now is living on this secularized model, telling that the religious model is not any more relevant because it divides, etc. And we want to go on by using a free reason, etc. But this model up to now, since 18th century, did not include actually this cross-cultural and cross-intellectual exercise by integrating other cultures, integrating it, not studying it from far as we do it in the Department of Oriental Studies. The Department of Oriental Studies, like it is now in all universities, it signifies, even by its administrative position in the university, as something put far from the organic, systematized model of thinking and of culture, which is the European one.
But what is this? A little bit ironic, what's your position now?
My position now precisely is to suppress the departments of Oriental Studies and to put history of Chinese culture, Japanese culture, African culture inside the Department of History, inside the Department of Philosophy, inside the Department of Religion.
But it means
this would be a cross-cultural exercise, as I call it, what I did myself in my life.
But for instance, when you have in Utrecht Professor Aisha as the successor of Professor Warenburg, he is a Muslim, I presume, or an Arab, but he is working in the structure, you say, not as a person, I mean, but...
Yeah, I don't mind, Aisha is a person. He's not all the culture. I don't mind whether he's a Muslim or not a Muslim. It's not the issue.
But
I'm not asking. No, at all. It's the absolutely, it has nothing to do. Me, I welcome any scholar, whatever is his own religion or philosophy. I don't mind.
No, but I mean, universities say, well, look at us. That is Professor Akun telling us that, but we have Muslims, we have people from...
But I am not asking for that. This is a wrong interpretation. I am not asking for positions for Muslims as such. No.
No, as a...
You can appoint in my place here for the chair a Dutch or an American or whatever, provided that he looks to the teaching of Islam in this cross-cultural, cross-intellectual approach. This all what I ask. I do not mind at all. If he is an Arab or a Turkish or an Iranian, I don't mind. It's not the problem.
It's not the point also.
No. Mm-hmm. This is a totally wrong approach.
Mm-hmm. I see. It's clear. What is, a little bit practically spoken, your purpose for lecturing now at university? You have been lecturing last year.
Yes.
Now you're getting a professorship.
Yes.
Formally professorship.
Yes.
In Holland. What is your purpose to...
Yes, my purpose is very clear. Precisely to demonstrate the necessity to create in European societies, and especially in EC, European Community Space, which is a new historical space, to create public spaces for cultural communication between all the groups living in European societies. It is a great privilege for European societies to be pluralist societies. It is a great chance that they have to give the possibility for so many ethno-cultural groups to live together in a democratic context. This is a historical achievement, a big historical achievement. I consider it as a step in the historical emancipation of human being, of human condition, how human condition can express itself. In my view, human condition can express itself fully at its best capacity if there are many groups belonging to many languages and many cultures who are able to communicate in a social political space which is democratic, in a very democratic way. This is the aim.
Okay. Well, you're
so I want to demonstrate that the creation of such public places where people can interact together without any ideological and search for hegemony or search for a wrong identity, as I told. And I want to establish the fact that this exercise for which I am calling is precisely lacking for the moment in all European societies. It doesn't exist.
Okay.
And I should say, I said it in several European countries already, that Holland has the privilege to have made the first step by creating this chair. It doesn't exist anywhere. By creating this chair, precisely to open it as a public chair, is absolutely the first step to go towards these spaces which are badly needed today in European societies.
You have two ways. When you talk about the search for identity in Europe, do you consider a real search as something worthwhile, or do you say you can't have an identity, it's not a fixed thing, it's something that develops, accumulates,
yes.
You're looking for something that isn't there?
Yes.
Because it's dynamic.
Yes, it's a dynamic. I want to create this dynamic, or to enhance a dynamic which already exists in some European societies. I consider that Holland is a dynamic society for this, because Holland doesn't have, for example, this complex for grandeur which France has. This, I consider, in the view I am opening, is a handicap, is an intellectual handicap, which is national, because it is made the basis, the grandeur is made the basis of the identity of a whole nation. Then it becomes very dangerous, and it is dangerous because French are having difficulties with their conception of integrating other people in the...
Although they have, I think, a real Institut National that...
Yes, Institut du Monde Arabe is also a step for, to this, but France has a larger minority, which raises even more problems than we have here. Here you have a small scale, but you have also this historical well-established flexibility in your conception of identity. I heard even Dutch people complaining that it is too flexible. You see?
Yeah.
There are Dutch who are saying, oh, it's too much, we are going to lose our language, our culture, losing what we are. Yes,
never,
it can be debated.
In no other country there are so much people, historians, locally occupied with little villages, with little wells, with mills, with whatever.
Yes.
You can't, every square meter you have an historian working on its identity of this neighbor.
This is good. This is good.
No,
this is very good. And it's not a problem. Precisely, I consider that you do it well because you have many levels of expressing your identity. And this is the richest way to keep the identity and to enrich it in the same time, and to express the identity in a dynamic process, mm-hmm. not in a static definition.
But when, for instance, you look at it, I presume you have been also teaching in Germany, now you have all those problems with Turks. Do
yes.
you consider it as a problem with minorities? Do you consider it as a problem with Turks? As a problem with outsiders? We don't know what to do with it.
It's first a problem with their own history.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget the history of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the history which is still alive in the mind of each German, woman or man. This we cannot forget. When you study the constitution, the German constitution, it's the result of what has happened during the war. When they have opened, for example, this large door to welcome any human being who asks for asylum, this is the result of the will to react against what has happened with Hitler regime. And of course they didn't think when they put this in the constitution that all this evolution will take place in East Europe. So they didn't think to all this. And this came very suddenly over them. So they cannot face it. It's like when you had the, how do you call it, in Zealand,
the coming water.
Disrupting of mm-hmm. dams, yes. You could not. It's too much.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to look at it like this. And also, German culture is extremely strong in its definition of identity, like in France.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So this also becomes a handicap.
Mm-hmm.
Today it is a handicap.
Do you consider it as something that has gone together? First, the people came in with the constitution, historically grown, and the other point is, like in France, La Grandeur, you have something in Germany that's compelling for the identity.
Ah yes, you have something, this Prussian conception of power,
mm-hmm.
and of German identity, strongly established also by culture, and that definition of nationality, that you cannot be German if you have not German blood in your, is the jus sanguinis. Jus sanguinis, of course, yes. Jus sanguinis expresses a philosophy.
Mm-hmm. But is it still now?
They have, of course, other regulations,
mm-hmm.
but hard regulations linked to this principle. For example, you have to stay, I don't know how many years that you can, or you have to be married, etc. This is complicated, I don't know exactly, but it has influenced for a long time.
But are you afraid?
The constitution of German nationality.
But do you think that you have to create public spaces like you're doing here in Holland, in Germany, to get over that kind of concept?
Absolutely.
What do you think it will result in something much more heavy than now?
In my view, this will happen in the next 10 years in European community as a new historical space. This definition is important. Historical space means it is the space where people are going to produce their history. They will not produce it in the limits of nations, of a nation state like it has been up to now. They are going to produce their history in a wider space where European identities, nationalist identities, as it has been elaborated since 17th, 18th century,
mm-hmm.
are going to face each other, and they are facing already. Look what has happened in the discussion about Maastricht. Every country is reacting with its identity. What will happen to me?
But don't you think that it will...
And this discussion
mm-hmm.
opened inside Europe for the first time. It belongs to the view I am developing.
But it is European, and it is it also keeping the people who are living here from other countries in it, or is it just...
Are keeping it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I consider that those groups from Asia, from Africa, from Muslim countries who are already settled in European societies will remain there. They
but
will
I mean,
not.
I mean also intellectually that they will be taken care of them in the sense that they are there. They have their ideas.
Yes,
they have their
and they can have their input mm-hmm. in the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
What I am doing, me.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm speaking like I am speaking, what I am doing. I am doing something inside
mm-hmm.
European thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I am saying the historical origins of European thinking are not as it is presented since 16th century in Europe. And I am asking to Europe to go back in their own history before the split, which is ideological more than philosophical, between the religious Christian model and the secularized model. This, I am saying, is a philosophical issue. As a philosophical issue, it's not closed. We have closed it as a juridical decision, as a political decision, because it allows to keep peace among people living in the same society,
mm-hmm.
not to wage wars
mm-hmm.
about religion. So it is
mm-hmm.
extremely useful to keep it like it is.
Mm-hmm.
I am for the laïcité solution, like it works in France.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I criticize the extreme side of French laïcité, because French laïcité has generated an absence of culture. They made unthinkable the religious dimension as a cultural dimension.
That is what you are saying in a book that has recently been translated.
Yes.
Also, maybe it has to do with the reason you are speaking in your
yeah, lecture. Yeah.
I'm wondering, is it possible for you to explain a little bit what is the possible input of Islam on laïcité, on the system that has gone through, that has, as you say, the Enlightenment is also a power of construction, is also not the latest point, it is something that has developed,
yes.
but it is not the ultimate.
Yes.
What kind of possibilities are there for Islam to...
Yes, it has two possibilities, and it is already doing this. First, it obliges European historians
mm-hmm.
to revise the way they have written history of thought,
mm-hmm.
history of culture
mm-hmm.
around Mediterranean area.
Mm-hmm. Because Islam is...
Is in it.
Mm-hmm.
They put it aside
mm-hmm.
by a coup de force.
Mm-hmm.
Because they... Because Europe has achieved a military victory on the Ottoman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
It has eliminated Ottoman Empire. And then it says,
mm-hmm.
now the model is the one
West and East.
I made.
Mm-hmm.
West and East, and Islam is totally rejected in an obscure East.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This is done with the acceptance of historians. And as far as historians are claiming for an objective method, an objective approach of the past, I'm saying they have no more right to adhere to this ideological split between Islamic culture and thought and Christian culture and thought since 16th century.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one point. Which means that you are going to change the structure of the departments of history. You are going to put in the departments of history people who will teach all together with other colleagues the history of Mediterranean area. This is a totally different approach. It's an intellectual revolution.
Yeah. Is that what Brodel is doing?
Exactly, Brodel did it. He's my here is one who has had influence on me. And yes, he's my intellectual father. On this, I claim it. Yes. And others, all those who have worked in his school, because he is the founder of a school in history. Well, second point is that for me, Islam, with its presence today in European societies, is a very good intellectual test for the ability of the laic philosophy, the laic political philosophy, if there is one implicit in it, to integrate, to insert in its system a new coming community, a new coming culture, which it did not up to now. Even Christianity, it did not engage with Christianity a relevant dialogue.
Who didn't?
The laïcité conception did not engage with religious attitude, a cultural open interacting dialogue.
Why is that? Because
because when you analyze the history of French Revolution, French Revolution has just destroyed. It has destroyed Cluny, the Abbaye de Cluny, which is a major cultural, civilizational achievement. How could people do this? In the name of what? Well, what's the reason to do this? So, this shows, and they killed so many people. In the name of what?
Okay, but what
which value?
What?
So, this has to be re-engaged.
The same kind of things you have in Tibet, China, doing the same with Tibetans.
Of course. What we are doing here, precisely, hopefully, may be then considered as a universalizable model. I say universalizable. I don't say universal, like it has been said in 19th century by European thinkers.
I see.
So this is also a difference.
But you have the clashes, you have what you say, the destruction of Cluny, but you said also there is a kind of position, a kind of balance, not to talk about religion, not to involve with religious affairs, because the state of affairs as it is, as a state, you can all live together without killing the
Absolutely.
Other ones. So intellectually maybe it's possible, but formally, in a state way, is it then possible?
Yes. What I am asking is just to create these spaces for culture. I am not asking to give back the right to religions to teach each one religion at schools. This never.
In Holland, this is the case, you know.
No, I don't agree. For example, they teach Muslim ethics in Belgium schools since Belgium government has recognized Islam. In Belgium.
You're not happy with that?
No! It's against the freedom of thinking for people. You have to give tools for thinking to children.
But I can imagine that you have...
And not to give them principles, defined, rigid principles, like we do in catechism. This you cannot do.
But walking in a school where you have Muslim ethics or catechism or Protestant ethics, and you can just listen to them, and because of the multicultural,
you can give it on a private on a private way.
The French influence.
Yes, you can give it. You are free to give it on a private way, but not to give it officially under the heading of the state. The state has the responsibility for the whole society, and the whole society is a pluralist society.
So you are
and
also against Muslims.
You have to protect
you are
pluralists.
I see. I understand. But do you think that what's doing in Holland, maybe in Belgium, that the state says, okay, you have this kind of schools because it's good for the people, they know their culture, and that goes against your point of view, I presume, because you have to grow, you don't go back in a school with people, like-minded people, Muslims or Catholics or Protestants, whatever school. In Holland, that's a real discussion. Do you have Islamic schools for Muslims, or do we have open schools with various people?
Yes. This problem, of course, has to be solved very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
For the moment, Muslims have weak position in the societies, in European societies. They are not considered as a part of the society. For example, they don't vote. When in a democratic regime people do not vote, they don't have.
Well, here in Holland, for the
I know Holland again did something which I hope will be a model. Okay, but it's not enough. So that's why I'm asking for spaces of communication that these Muslims can communicate between themselves, because they don't communicate enough between themselves. They have different nationalist origins, and this affects their position in the society. So they have to communicate among themselves, and also to communicate with all other groups.
You have seen in Holland, as because there were some problems when they said you will be the professor, you have spoken with the various groups of Muslims here, the Surinams and
yes.
Turks and etc. What is your impression? Because to say maybe not quotable, but to say you have grown so far as a elitist, maybe not a nice word, but as something in the avant-garde, and the people here are backwards. So when you spoke with them, what
precisely, when I spoke with them, first they understood, because I explained very clearly these ideas. And when you explain it clearly, bringing arguments from inside Islamic thought itself, and not only from the Western side. Yes, this is the way it has to work. You have to respect people. Each one has his own references. This is the weak point. Precisely, because Western people, European peoples, don't know enough of this Islamic culture to use it as a culture, not a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is
the point you said from the laïcité and the difficulties Christianity and Islam to really speak together, to put it simple, and the laïcité with Islam. You said there's a new challenge now. What is it? Do you think that the laïcité or the Enlightenment has brought the secular society, has made it so difficult to speak about it? Is it intellectually? Is it we don't care enough because of stupid Christians, stupid Muslims, stupid atheists, whatever, we don't talk with them? What do you think is it that it makes it so difficult for intellectuals in Holland, for instance, or wherever in the Western world, to take religion seriously?
Yes.
What is it? I was the first journalist at our newspaper who said I'm a historian of religions, and I want to take it as something to take serious in an intellectual newspaper.
Yes. When in Europe we say that God is dead, it has a great meaning, because God is dead not as a theological reference only. God is dead as an experience made by each human being, experience relating to the what we call absolute, what we call the transcendence, what we call the values to which we aspire as attractive values. Each individual has inside himself an attraction for values. And when we say God is dead, we are killing this aspiration for values to go beyond our limits as individuals. And what is dominating in our language and in our use of reason is what we call in sociology functionalism. I heard, and I hear it all the time. When I try to speak like this with my colleagues, mm-hmm. who are those in charge to deal with these issues, the sociologist says, oh, that's the way it works. Look to this expression. That's the way it works. Don't ask me to tell you more about what I am describing, because me, I am an expert who is telling you how it works. I heard it in Middelburg, and not only in Middelburg, in all places. It became a structure of our mind. The cognitive structure, as I call it, maybe you will find a way as a journalist to express it more simply, but yes, the cognitive structure of what we call our culture, as it is elaborated and as we made it working in the European societies, especially after the Second World War, and more especially since the end of history, as we somebody called it, Fukuyama, the end of history is the triumph of the market rules. The market is going to regulate all human activities, whether cultural, whether economic, whether politic. And this philosophy, which has not even now any challenge anywhere, is based on functionalism. Functionalism with the seek for efficiency only. And if we seek efficiency, what does this mean? We seek power. If I do it better than you, I'm going to be more powerful than you. Then you will be submitted to me, willing or not. This is the basic philosophy on which we are exchanging all our activities. So the problem is to ask the hegemonic part where this philosophy emerged and has been made overwhelmingly working in all the societies to tell to this place of hegemony, is it possible to continue to do what we are doing? That's why I come back to Europe as the historical space where this philosophy is at work and where intellectuals, scholars, writers, artists, all the people concerned with the production of meaning in the society, expliciting meaning in the society. This is the ultimate responsibility. Who is in charge of expliciting meaning in the society? Who is in charge?
You mean meaning is also values?
Of course. We are human beings trained up to now, at least, to ask for meaning of what we are doing. You ask me to do something, I want to know what does this mean.
But do you think, it's rather simple, but do you think that it's a dual position? People, like in Christianity, to say people are bad, so they're seeking power, for instance. And on the other hand, you have people looking for meaning, looking for things going further than just themselves.
Yeah.
Is that a kind of follows?
Yes. For the moment we are in this stage of history, yes. Because the economy, for example, is looking for efficiency.
But are you hopeful in
efficiency is profits, making profits.
but it's something that has gone on and on and on, and it has got its own momentum. It can be maybe not turned back, but slowed down.
Yes. I, of course, I am struggling for this. Mm-hmm. This is my philosophy. Mm-hmm. I cannot accept.
What will happen if it goes on like it goes on now?
Ongoing war. And we see it. It is emerging everywhere. Mm-hmm. And this war will not be settled. They are meeting in Vienna for human rights today, tomorrow. Tomorrow from 12 to 15. It's a very big meeting. International United Nations meeting to discuss on human rights. The discourse on human rights as it is handled, used in the hegemonic place is became a purely political weapon. It doesn't carry any philosophy of human person. And the struggle is around human person. And on human person we do not yet agree how to speak about human person. We do not agree because we did not face altogether the problem of how to speak on human person with respect and not disregard to the various ways already displayed and elaborated and existing of speaking on human person.
Do you consider
there is a Chinese way of speaking on human person?
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of regard we give to this way?
Mm-hmm.
And which kind of regard Chinese are giving to the way we are speaking on human person?
In that way, do you think it's important that there is something like the Catholic Church worldwide was always pushing?
I don't like the Catholic, because Catholic in its origin means orthodoxy.
Mm-hmm.
I reject totally the concept orthodoxy,
mm-hmm.
because it is against
mm-hmm.
the necessary pluralism mm-hmm. of human mind.
Mm-hmm.
Human mind is pluralist. Because it can give many combinations many meaningful combinations
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to lose one of them.
But you're asking the most difficult for people, I think.
This is the way I think human being can feel attracted
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to more than he has.
Mm-hmm.
This is the way. And I am not attracted, I have never, because I told you from the beginning, I am from a minority.
Mm-hmm.
So I am educated in not claiming power, because I could never claim for power. And it's okay for me, I don't claim for power.
Okay, you go that way, but for instance, the people in Christianity and in Islam who go fundamentalists, to use that word, they seek guidance, they seek guidance.
Yes, they seek for guidance because we did not provide yet for societies any alternative to have a new relationship to their being a person.
You're from Algeria. You undoubtedly followed what has happened with the parties and with fundamentalists there in Algeria. How do you look to that development? Something necessity, something that draws back again, something you can understand but you abhor?
It is something which I understand very well from a historical point of view,
mm-hmm.
from a sociological point of view,
mm-hmm.
from a politological point of view. I can make all these analyses,
mm-hmm.
but there is no way that I can accept precisely or I can adhere to what is happening since the independence.
Mm-hmm.
I rejected it since the beginning
mm-hmm.
as an Algerian.
Mm-hmm.
It was wrong since the beginning
mm-hmm.
because all the values, all the aspirations for freedom that Algerians shared all together during the war, I was a student and I remember very well, and I can tell it in the face of many ministers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes? The way power has been confiscated by a group, small group of people, against Algerian aspirations for freedom after a terrible war of liberation. This way showed already in 62 that it was going to be a big failure. Because this small group who took power then took it inside Khrushchev ideology. Inside Khrushchev ideology. And inside a conception of Arab nation and the model of Nasser, Gamal Abdel Nasser conception, which was itself under the influence of Tito conception, look to Yugoslavia. But yes, this is the history, nobody can deny it. And they went, this group in Algeria went in this ideological line to make Algeria totally rid from France and to put Algeria in the line of the communist, Khrushchevist, Brezhnevist, Titiist ideology, regardless to all what Algerian people are. I cannot agree, and I did not agree.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm in France. I have chosen to be in France.
Mm-hmm.
It's a choice.
You can go to Algeria, or you're not.
I'll go to Algeria. Yes,
mm-hmm.
I'll go.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, now I can say this like I say it. Yeah.
You can say it, yeah.
Now I can say it.
Mm-hmm.
But before I could not.
Mm-hmm.
If I said this before, I could not go back to Algeria.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can say it and go back.
What kind of state?
So something has happened.
Uh-huh.
Of course.
But are you happy with that?
I'm happy that we can speak a little bit more than we did.
Mm-hmm.
And it is allowed, and there are Algerians who are listening to this and who are discovering the positive aspect of the tragedy through which we are going.
But that was a historical mistake, and now you have the fundamentalists who have taken...
No. Don't speak on fundamentalists in like all people do. No. I never speak on fundamentalists.
Mm-hmm.
Like my colleagues, so-called politologists do.
Mm-hmm.
A fortiori, I do not speak on fundamentalists as many journalists do. It is totally unfair and unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not historical again.
Mm-hmm.
It's not sociological.
It's a wrong term.
Yes, it's absolutely wrong. All is wrong. I never use it.
I'm just teasing. But
yes.
How would you describe it?
Oh.
Can you work with a word? Because the word is a mistake.
Yes. I start by eliminating the usual vocabulary which is used currently, for example, saying Islam, saying Muslims, saying Islamic fundamentalism. All this vocabulary I disregard completely. So I start from this, and it is very difficult to get rid from it, because it comes again and again. Because what I want to do, I want to look in each society, whatever is the society, in medieval ages or today, I want to look in the society what social actors are doing. Each human being, I look at him as an actor on the theater. The theater is the society. The actor is playing a role. Each one is playing his role in the hierarchy, in which society puts people. When I say social actors, I'm using a concept which has no predetermined value. I am not adhering from the beginning to Islam to defend it or to attack it. So if you do it like this, then you are going to do to explore so many hidden forces in the society, so many unreached yet, unthought yet, unknown yet mechanisms at works in each actor and in each group to which actors belong. This is the way to go.
That's clear.
So if you want to study Algerian case, mm-hmm. you open your eyes, mm-hmm. your ears, and you go to Algeria, and you start by discovering how many groups are living in Algeria. And you will be afraid when you will discover the diversity of these groups, which you named with your arrogance the fundamentalists,
yeah,
and the Muslims.
Mm.
You are all of them.
Mm.
My God.
Stupid.
Yes, now you laugh.
Yeah.
But many people, all the people use it.
It's handy.
So
it's
by this example, you have a key, which is a general key for all societies. All societies work, perceive, categorize, make categories of people, not according to a knowledge, to a controlled knowledge, but according to the imaginaire social, the social imaginaire. That is a key that should be given to all citizens in Europe. Let Europeans accept to look to their thinking, not as they do, saying that all European thinking is based on a very rationalized, positive, controlled, critical rationality. But they can start to think that they are, like all other societies, using an imaginaire of rationality. The imaginaire of rationality, produced in Europe precisely, is the strongest you can find in the world. Because reason is working as an imaginaire, but it is producing a discourse to hide this operation. Please explain this in a good Dutch.
Yeah, I understand. But I have all the space, I have a whole page.
Yes, so. Please, but this is a key.
Yeah, I understand.
Because with this key, you will understand how Dutch society is categorizing Muslims. What Dutch society is putting in this box on which is written, these books are Muslims.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, I think, because it's a kind of society with television and with trivia and...
But more than that, scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
Scholarship.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
More than that.
Yeah.
Me, I am challenging scholarship.
I
and I do it because I have reached an age where I can do it. I'm totally free, I'm not asking for any job. Ah yes, that's why I speak like I...
Position of power.
Absolutely, no. For me it's a position of freedom.
Independent, I know.
Freedom. I don't look for power precisely, anymore. If I did, ever.
I just have... I won't hold you too long. I just have another question. I was only in the possibility to scan through the text you made for John Hicks for the bundle.
Yeah.
Because he's 17 or
35. He's my greatest friend.
Yeah?
Oh, yes. I adhere totally to his thinking. He is a man who thinks absolutely like me. Yes.
Well, he was my eye-opener when I was a student.
Absolutely.
But I've never met
John Hicks. He's my brother.
Mm-hmm.
Intellectual, spiritual brother.
Mm-hmm.
And we love each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because he went through a struggle exactly like me. I am doing
mm-hmm.
in my own sector.
But then, okay, I'll use that. But I have time to read the whole...
And you can tell it, yes.
Because it's not much known here in Holland, apart from some philosophers and some scholars.